call to order the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Public Safety Subcommittee, Tuesday, March 22nd, 2005. We are today meeting around the agency program prioritization for House Bill 5061, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and House Bill 5057, the Oregon State Police. And members, we will start with the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. We are also opening without a quorum at this point. And good afternoon, Director Minnis. If you would come on up and help us in our walkthrough. Representative Hannah, you have a guest. Would you please introduce her?
Thank you, Madam Chair. With me today is Katie Nichols, a student from Gilkey Middle School, or the French American School out of Portland. She's an eighth grader, and she is trailing me today at the Capitol. And she said part of the day was boring, but part of the day is going to be fun. She's a wonderful student and speaks English, German, and French.
Excellent. Well, please know that you are welcome. We have some materials handed out there so that you can follow along. We hope that this is a good experience for you today. And also please note that the Oregon Legislative Assembly has not yet achieved, in terms of numbers, a body that is half women. And so there's something for you to aspire to. Pick your seat in the House or Senate and think about public service in your future. But again, it's a pleasure to have you with us this afternoon. Mr. Wilson, if you would please highlight for us what are the major issues, challenges, if you will, in the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training budget, and then we will do a walkthrough and review of the purpose and effectiveness of each of the program units and activities.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, the the large sheets, it should be the same as passed off yesterday in full. I have extra copies if you'd like an extra copy. Keep in mind this is an agency that has a significant increase in it, primarily for three reasons. The construction of a new facility and opening of that new facility during the current biennium. The debt service associated with that has increased significantly from 0305 to 0507. And then the expansion of the basic training course for law enforcement from 10 to 16 weeks. The combination of those three items significantly increases this budget. Those are decisions that have been made by past legislatures and set into place. This is an agency whose primary responsibility, in terms of at least in what's used in the budget, is training. It also is responsible for certification, setting standards, and others for public safety officials. The one program, it also licenses and provides limited training for private security. Major training is for law enforcement, also fire, EMT, dispatchers, as well as operating a program for it's called the Public Safety Memorial Fund, which is a fund that will provide payments for families whose loved ones that were law enforcement or public safety people died in the line of duty or severely injured in the line of duty. So with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson. Members, if we could start by going through each one of the department's programs and activities. What I would ask us to focus on is a review of the purpose and effectiveness of each program unit. or activity, and this is an opportunity to seek clarity or additional information with Director Nenis present. So starting with item number one, debt service.
Okay.
Sure, if you'd like to comment and then go to the members.
Debt service is purely payments on debt, like I mentioned before, a significant increase. Actually, in this one, you will see a savings when we get to work session. Should be able to reduce this amount by roughly $3 million because of changes in the market conditions.
Say that again, please.
By the time you get to work session, this amount, the $11.9 million, will actually be reduced by roughly $3 million. Because of changes in the market conditions and issuing costs. So that's the good news in terms of saving some money.
Any further questions?
Okay. Criminal justice training. This is their basic law enforcement training. It includes the increase just built into this from going from 10 to 16 weeks. And it is mainly training and coordination of training staff for law enforcement-related items. That includes law enforcement, parole and probation, correctional officers, both at the state and local level, and telecommunicators. I don't think I've missed anyone.
What members, what I would also seek here with your help is, if you wish to challenge or question the department's ranking of any of these program units or activities, please speak to that as we go through the list. Senator Devlin?
Sorry, Madam Chair. Just a request for phase two. I have not changed the department's rankings, but could we get a listing like for maybe from the last police officer training class a year back of who has sent people to BPSS, Board of Police Standards Safety and Training. and who has graduated and who has been washed out, basically. Not by name, just numbers.
Now, just clarification, I'll make sure I understand the question. You would like a list of all of the agencies that have had officers come through the training, I assume the total number by agency, and then how many of those persons have failed, without the names, but by agency.
For two different reasons, just to see what the washout factor is and also to see who's sending people for training now, who are the larger, smaller players, both.
You want that for 1 year or 2 years? Or
1 year.
1 year. Great.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that we've had this discussion and probably will continue to have, but as we look at the training phase here, I'm wondering if now is the time to try to understand if we were going to go from 16 weeks to the preferred, 22 or 23 weeks that the state police are looking for in their training. Do we have an estimate, or could we be provided with an estimate of the cost to do that?
Madam Chair, Representative, you might hear maybe later in your discussions, you mentioned 22 weeks of training that OSP provides for their recruits. You may want to divide the question a little bit, because there's a lot of the training that they do that is agency-specific training. And I think the department's objective would be to not get into agency-specific training for particular organizations, and each of the organizations have their own individual needs based on their rules, procedures, and policies, and so on and so forth, and some of their practices that may differ from the basic training. I would submit to you that where OSP talks about 22 weeks of training, that our analysis would show that it really doesn't always add up to 22 weeks, so we might want to get to a place where we understand what we're actually asking. I can give you a cost analysis to do 22 weeks of training. It's the content portion of it that I may have to have some further direction on.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
It could be that my question isn't perfect. The idea is that this is supposed to be one of the greatest training centers in the country. I mean, it's one of the newest, brightest stars. And I still question, if it's not 22 weeks, whatever the number of weeks in are, and whatever that specialized training is, why we can't provide it in a state-of-the-art training facility. That's the question I want to get to the bottom of, whether it's how many weeks. But this committee needs to understand the differences between the basic training that you provide and the training that's over and above that, or that has a higher bar through some other agency, and if you can do it, and what it would cost to do.
Okay. And Madam Chair, Representative, let me try to come back with a response that will give you, hopefully, an answer to your question, because I do believe whether OSP, if we're talking OSP specific, if that's the question, is doing their training at this facility and our organization can accommodate that need at this site. And I'll give you a greater detail later, whether it's divided into two sections or not, a basic training program and an advanced training program that's tailored specific to OSP's needs. We can do that and accommodate that at the facility and are willing to facilitate it. But let me take a shot at trying to answer that question. But the other question might be the national average of 22 weeks as a basic core program, because some states are at that level, notwithstanding their agency-specific training. And we can do that, too, but there would be two different costs.
Director Menes and Representative Hannah, before we go further, I would like to invite forward Superintendent Recker, if you will come forward, because we're referencing the Oregon State Police and you're in the room. Did you wish to pursue further your question,
well,
Superintendent?
I can say it again. I'm not sure how clear I'm being, but as we've been through both of these budgets, they both contain, you know, one is a training agency and one has a $1 million training budget. There are obviously some training elements that would need to take place that are industry or agency specific. I still do not feel clear on the differences between what can be provided at a brand new state-of-the-art facility for which this legislative body, prior to us, though some of you were here, saw fit to move forward with. If it is the best and the brightest and we're doing what seems like an incredible service to training in Oregon for this agency and these industries within that, we ought to be doing as much of it as we can to take advantage of the economies that are there, and we ought to be vetting out those answers.
Representative Hannah, let me try this, and Senator Devlin, we will come to you. For both gentlemen, I think what we're trying to get at here are what are the differences in the training provided by each agency. And then, as we understand that, where's the overlap?
Madam Chair, if I may, and members of the committee, for the record, Ron Recker, Superintendent of the State Police. The training that the Oregon State Police provides at its Basic Recruit Academy is 883 hours of training. If you divide that by 40-hour training weeks, which is the standard, as I understand it, that is used at DPSST's academy, it's 22 weeks plus a few hours. So that's why we keep referencing 22 equivalent weeks. We happen to we accomplish it in less than 22 weeks' time because we have an agreement with our labor organization that allows us to train on the evenings and on weekends without incurring overtime. But 883 hours of training divided by 40 hours of training, which would be a typical training week, is 22 equivalent weeks.
What are the differences in content?
And, Madam Chair, I am not in a position to speak to the class-by-class the curriculum, the number of hours on each subject matter maybe John is in a position to talk to that. But as I would like to say that, as the director has pointed out, a great deal of our training is done at our academy is agent specific to agency policy, practices, and procedures that every police agency has, specific to their own agency. And I agree with the director when he makes a statement that much of what I think it might be a fair general statement to say that the difference is that which is unique to the state police, which we're going to have to train people on anyway, is probably, it would be a fair characterization, I think, to say that's the difference between 16 and 22 weeks. But now, whether in the State Police Academy, I know that, I don't know if the number of hours we spend on use of force is the same, less, or more than what DPSST is. I can't answer those type of questions.
Well, in addition to hours, is the content of the training on the subject the same or different? But again, if we could kind of tease out here, where is the overlap between the two agencies?
Well, I'll make one last comment, and I'll hand it to you. We, the state police, have been invited by DPSST to participate in the development of the 16-week curriculum. And we have had my staff and John's staff have compared notes and shared views and perspectives on what that 16-week curriculum should be. I'll let John speak to exactly what it is, but we have been partners in the development of that curriculum, and so there wouldn't be a duplication of it. For example, if state troopers in the future went to the 16-week curriculum of DPSST and then went to a follow-up 6 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever it would be with us for our agency-specific policies and procedures training, we're not going to duplicate and retrain them on something that they already got at DPSST.
Senator Devlin, I'd like to continue this. And Representative Hanna, please weigh in where you need to.
Madam Chair, I was going to see if the Chair might entertain a suggestion. Going away from the issue of the Board of Police Standards, Safety and Training, and the State Police, but trying to understand why some other law enforcement agencies, sheriffs, chiefs of police, might be doing some training through the Board of Police Standards, Safety and Training. This rule makes discussion longer. And yes, I mean, we do have Chiefs of Police Association. We have the associations for the sheriffs. Each of them, I think, would be more than, maybe not happy, but be willing to select two or three representative departments and maybe to have them, at least in writing, come back and basically identify the normal type of training that they would go through the Board of Police Safety Standards and Training and the normal type of training that they would do with their own staff and their own resources, just so that the committee could get some clearer understanding of this. Because I do think that there are some elements in all law enforcement departments where they're going to want to go through the Board of Police Standards, Safety and Training, and where they're going to want to control training at the local level, both because of maybe some of the unique issues in their area or what they believe is their mission, but also simply the collective bargaining costs and everything else in terms of if you can do training that's on-site, which I think you do some remote training that's on-site also. But it's a lot different than sending three deputies up from Jackson County to stay for 3 days of training in Salem and paying them per diem and overtime and everything else than doing the training. And I think that you're going to see a lot of departments that actually still will retain their own training function.
Senator Devlin, I would agree that that is information that would be helpful, yeah, useful in the next phase. But I think what we're trying to do right now, yeah, is get a clearer understanding of what are the differences between these two agencies who are sitting with us, yeah, now, and again, where is the overlap? Representative Hanna?
Madam Chair, thank you. I don't mean to belabor this point. I look at the investment we've made in this training center, the type of staff that I've been told and feel confident that we've used in the past and that we will continue to use in terms of training, the fact that we have a shooting range and a driving course and a simulated village town and I just question if we have that type of facility. I mean, if we're doing state police training for, bump and run drivers in a parking lot somewhere or on a state fair
parking lot, is that as good as doing it at the training center? Or, and I don't know that we're doing that. I'm just making that up. I don't know what those trainings are, but I guess I'd like to understand what the differences of the actual training is and where you go do it, that you have a better facility that would be, you know, for less cost than this center.
Did you wish to respond?
There's a broad range of responses, and I think we're to some degree mixing apples, oranges, and turnips in different vintages, if you will. We have, first off, you need to understand OSP, when they train in their basic academy, they train to the standards of the current 10-week training academy, and then they do additional things on top of that are more or less. Agency-specific or agency kind of cultural or practices that are specific to OSP. And Superintendent's correct, we have invited them in to participate with us in the development of the 16-week curriculum, but we're talking about basic training. Now, I got a little bit off from not understanding necessarily where Senator Devlin was going, and so maybe some clarification. If you're talking about basic training programs in Oregon right now, there are two agencies that are currently doing their own basic training, OSP and the Eugene Police Department, that have run their own police academies here recently. ORS 181, which is the chapter that empowers this agency to do what it does, when this facility is certified as complete, no agency in the state is allowed under the existing law, unless you change it, to do basic training outside of this facility. So that is the basic training program. So I think from a concept perspective, policy-wise, and from my preceding experience in the legislature, the objective was to try to consolidate and build the best possible basic training program we could in the state for the state's interests for all agencies, including the Department of State Police, understanding that there are differences once people go back into their districts. Now, there is a subsequent training program for most agencies, the Portland Police Bureau, and theoretically if OSP, when they merge into our academy, they will have a need to have an advanced academy or an agency-specific academy, as does the Portland Police Bureau, because there are practices and procedures that they do that are in addition to what the basic training program might provide for them, because we are at that basic level. There's also field training. Once they go back to their district, there is a field training period of time that's usually an 18-month probationary period in which they're supervised by a field training officer, and there's a field training manual that's distributed to these field training officers who supervise these officers in the field. And then once they're off probation, they become a full-fledged police officer and they're no longer subject to at-will employment law. Then there is an ongoing maintenance standard that's required by the board so that individuals continue to keep their proficiencies at a state level. And each agency also prescribes their own maintenance standards specific to the objectives of the chief or the sheriff or the manager of that organization. What DPSSD tries to do in addition to the basic training is facilitate in the regional training environment those needs by agencies throughout the state. And what we're attempting to do is to do it in cooperation. So I think I hear the question being, how can we maximize this facility so we're getting the best utilization out of the facility? And I think we're heading down that direction. It's new territory for us, but I think that we're moving in that direction in developing the 16-week curriculum as a basic program and then facilitating partnerships with OSP and other organizations to do the advanced training and maintenance training. I don't know if that answers the question, but I can give you, by the way, a side-by-side comparison of OSP's curriculum and DPSSD's curriculum to show you where the differences are.
That would be very helpful. And Representative Hanna, is this information getting at your question?
I think it's the kind of conversation we need to have. I don't really think we're there yet, mm-hmm. but I think mm-hmm. we're getting to that. Yes. I think it'll be important to see the differences in the two trainings, and I think will be important to know whether or not, I mean, let's keep in mind that this new facility is a fluid place. They don't just do basic training. If they can switch from basic training to fire training to private security licensing and training, it tells me they have the capability to vary their training method. If they have to have a 4 or 6 or 8 week additional course time that would take corrections or patrol officers above and beyond, it seems like it's a possibility, at least worth discussing.
Let's do this. This is a suggestion from Mr. Wilson, which I definitely agree with. Let's convene a meeting that would include the Oregon State Police, DPSST. Representative Hannah, would you be willing to participate with me?
Certainly.
As we unpack the differences in the training topics, as you're wanting to do, as I'm wanting to do, look at the overlap and any other issues that surface. We would love your help with this. Okay. Representative Wisner.
Yeah, my question, Madam Chair, was to the two gentlemen. Is the basic training, is that 10 weeks, and that's what we're going to go to 16 weeks?
Madam Chair, Representative, it is currently 10 weeks in the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and it is going to 16 weeks January of 07.
Can for the superintendent, the Oregon State Police is now, you're doing 22 weeks now.
22 equivalent weeks, yes,
yes
sir.
Yes, sir. And so Director Menace's facility goes to 16 weeks, your 16 weeks will still be required, and that's advanced. Is that scenario type training? Is it?
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnant, we intend to send our recruit officers through the DPSST 16-week course side by side with other agencies, and conduct our own agency-specific training thereafter in whatever amount is appropriate at the time. I couldn't tell you if it's going to be exactly 6 more weeks or if it'll be 4 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever. It's about our agency policies and procedures and our own practices unique to the Oregon State Police that we need to train people on.
Okay, so, Madam Chair, then, so we go back to the $1 million training budget. That's for, you would not integrate at all. That $1 million is for a year or 6 months, I think we went through before. So how do you know how much you're going to need if you haven't developed your 6 weeks training program?
Madam Chair, Representative Wisman, we do a lot of training in the agency that's aside from training of basic recruit officers. And $1 million doesn't come close to touching what it requires us to keep our workforce trained. Basic recruits, ongoing in-service training, as the director talked about, there are state minimum standards for that, and then plus we have agency-specific in-service related to the individual disciplines of the officers and the programs they're assigned to, management training, et cetera, et cetera. So that $1 million is a figure that is part of the equation, but it's certainly not all of it.
I had the difficult task of doing a Department of Defense training facility, so I had to tell the Air Force and the Navy and the Army to get together and train, and that was not, I assure you, that was as difficult a task as the what we're facing here.
If I may, Madam Chair and Representative, the State Police has no, I realize there's a perception around it. It kind of drives me a little crazy because that this perception exists that somehow we're dragging our feet on partnering with DPSST. It is absolutely not the case. I've written a letter to the director so stating we're going to be a full partner in the 16-week academy because that's all that we can, that there's an opportunity to partner with right now. The balance of what will happen beyond 16 weeks is going to continue to be my responsibility, as it would be any police chief or sheriff or any agency director of any agency anywhere. The training and accountability for the performance of my employees is something I'm still responsible for. And we have no reluctance to partner with the DPSST in this basic academy at all.
Superintendent, if I could just inject here, and I'll come back to you, Representative Wisnett. I'm not aware of anyone on this committee who would characterize the Oregon State Police as dragging their feet, as you framed it, as it relates to partnering with the DPSST. I have not heard that characterization from anyone, and you certainly won't hear that from me. What I have heard and what you're hearing now is that people are trying to understand what is the nature of the relationship of the partnership currently, and what might that relationship look like enhanced with the help support of the legislature. So I just want to say that to you on the record and leave it at that. Representative,
no, you did, Madam Chair. That was. I mean, we're not. You know, we're. I don't think I'm not trying to judge or to tell you how to train your officers. And I realize you have ongoing training, and you know, but we're talking basic training here. I thought, so we need to get that out of the way, and then you know, justify and describe what you need for your ongoing training, your special training. And again, as outsiders looking at this, we're building a new building. Why can't we do all the training? I mean, that's our picture, and that's you know, I think Representative Hannah and I have been talking about is we're trying to figure out, you know, how we can do it. And we're not questioning your ability or the need to have continuing training. I understand that, and you need to have that. But if, you know, it's trying to look after money and find money for other programs, if we can, you know, put it all together and save $500,000 or whatever, we look like good guys, and I think that's what we're trying to do.
And I would also add that if you look at our principles to guide public safety judicial prioritization, this is the set of principles developed by this committee. Do you have that? Have you received that set of principles? Well, I'm just going to read for the record the one that I think applies to the discussion we're having right now. It's the second principle, which states that state government should be stable, responsive, and accountable to Oregonians. There is no business as usual with state government. We must be responsible stewards of the public's money while giving them superior customer service. This means we must work in a cooperative and coordinated manner with the private sector and other levels of government. The ongoing stability and responsiveness of the system is essential to its credibility. That's where we're coming from as a committee. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In between the questions from Representative Hannah, Representative Wisnant, and others, I still hear some differences in terms of what's being asked. I'm still going away from the Oregon State Police, and I'm understanding that everyone is going to go through the basic training through the Board Police Standard Safety and Training. He needs to come in with a proposal for a shorter name. And to what degree BPSST will be utilized for what might be continuing training or advanced training. And I think they have a role in both of those areas, but to gain somewhat of an understanding that there will be departments that will want to do continuing training on their own for their own purposes, and may even want to do some advanced training on their own. And I think that's the thing that's being hard to understand here. Basic training, I think, is, as the director said, is a done issue in terms of state law. The rest is probably needs better understanding. But I think what I'm hearing being asked is, to what degree is this new modern facility going to be utilized to its maximum capability to provide services to law enforcement in the state, not merely to the Oregon State Police, but to all law enforcement agencies.
Representative Hannah.
Madam Chair, and Senator Devlin brings up an excellent point right there, but we might also, you know, consider that to what degree are we maximizing what we're going to do at the new facility? To what degree are we underutilizing whatever other facilities have been used for 10 or 12 or 16 weeks of training that now, potentially, there would be 4 weeks or 5 weeks or 6 weeks of training at?
Yeah.
So it's not just maximizing the efficiency of the new facility, it's the underutilization of whatever else is out there. So you're going to leave yourself with two potential training systems, one of which should be state-of-the-art, new, great, one of which I personally know very little about, and I admit that, but we do know that we're eliminating a great deal of the training that once happened through some other system, and it's now moving to here. So it's not just maximizing one, it's what's happening to the other as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a responsibility to understand this.
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, the Department of State Police has a partnership with the Oregon Military Department, and through that partnership we lease a building at Camp Rylea. And that is where state, the building is comprised of one classroom, some sleeping dormitories, and a cafeteria. It's a self-contained single unit. And we use that facility actually the year round, occasionally for recruit training when we hire recruits. And in recent history, that's been a rare occasion. We did graduate one class there this last January. But whether or not we're training recruits, that facility is used pretty much the year round as our first option on where to conduct ongoing in-service training for the patrol division, for the criminal division, for fish and wildlife officers, whatever. And the single classroom that we have down there is not sufficient, nor is it always available to do the training that we need to do. So we do that as option one, and then we go to other places. Sometimes we've used the military academy out at DPSST or at Western Oregon College or other facilities that we can acquire because we need space to do training. When the new academy opens, there's going to be included in there a classroom for state police training or for utilization by our people, as well as our training section staff will be there full time. And we would then use that classroom as option one for this ongoing training that I'm talking about, not basic recruit training. We still have a lot of other training to perform, and we still need to keep our partnership with Camp Rialia because we cannot do things like SWAT training or other types of training at the new academy by agreement between us and the DPSST and our partners. So there's an interest in keeping that facility at Camp Rialia, and we will we train not only just the state police there, but we train in partnership with other agencies. We have trained, for example, with Portland Police Bureau, our crowd control teams, Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, and other agencies where people come down to Camp Rialia, and we do some things there that we can do and not do in another setting. So that is the best answer I can give you, Representative Hanna, to that question. What about the long-term utilization of the classroom that we now have? And we're on a five-year lease with the military department. My commitment to this body and everybody else would be, if in the future we do not see the need to continue that arrangement on a full-time basis, and we but rather needed to rent the facility from the military at Camp Rialia only, you know, a certain time of the year or portion of the year, we'll change the arrangement so that we are not paying for a facility that's sitting empty when we're not using it. But we don't know for sure at this point what that reality is going to be.
Representative Hanna, and then I'd like us to start moving on.
Okay. Madam Chair, thank you. Just as a follow-up for the benefit of those who aren't aware of what a major investment this is in terms of the training facility and in terms of underutilization of other assets, and maybe Doug can help us with this, but as an example, we have a long-term commitment that we cannot walk away from still with the facility at Western Oregon to the tune of,
I believe it was $90,000 a year.
2017, Madam Chair.
Yeah. $90,000 a year through 2017 is another example of, you know, we've made a huge commitment here. Hopefully we can do something, work with that university for their benefit because, you know, they're stuck with some debt there as well. But it's just another example where we just need to pay close attention and we need to make sure that when we, you know, leave this place, we've done all we can to maximize the best use of taxpayer dollars and to not leave underutilized assets, and that we haven't paid close attention to how we administered their use.
Excellent comments. Representative Hansen, did I see your hand earlier? No, I guess I didn't.
I had just one quick question, Madam Chair. The superintendent, or to Mr. Director Menes, too, is, are there going to be state police officers on the staff providing this training? And will they be part of Mr. Menes' organization, or will they be detailed from the state police, or how does that?
Madam Chair, Representative, wasn't it two answers to your question, unfortunately. One is, as the site is developed and as the superintendent has indicated, there is office space and there will be a presence of OSP personnel on site. My understanding is that presence is there primarily to do the in-service training for OSP, but I would envision, this is me, the second part of the question, that and the relationship that I would like to have with the Oregon State Police and other agencies, including the Department of Corrections, would be that those individuals would also participate in facilitating training in other areas within the academy structure. And I just, if I could address one thing, because I want to let you know that I think if you talk about underutilization or utilization of this particular facility we're moving in. The Portland Police Bureau have already approached me and asked me if I would lease part of this facility to them for 9 months out of the year to do in-service training for 1,000 police officers, which would take up 9 months of time in this facility. So I think you need to understand there is not a problem trying to utilize this facility. In fact, the problem is more going to be how do we meet the demand that will be present once this facility is finished. If you talk to Sheriff Ramirez in Marion County, he wants to use the facility also. Sheriff Bob Wolf in Polk County would love to use the facility. The Salem Police Department would love to use the facility. All of their reserve programs would love to use the facility. Western Baptist College just down the street wants to use the facility. We are not lacking for demand or inquiry, and that's one of the legislative concepts that we have in this session that hopefully will be approved, is the ability for this agency to charge a fee for utilization of the facility and appropriate some of those costs so that we're not giving away a service that that has value to it. I think our first obligation is to try to meet the needs of the state system and the state police and the Department of Corrections and that system first. Because I think that's our obligation and that's our basic interest. So I hope that helps you just a little bit. We're not lacking for demand.
And Madam Chair, if I may also respond to you and to Representative Wisnant. The State Police, from the beginning of this discussion about the investment in DPSST's training capacity, and that's what this is. I mean, today, a 10-week basic police academy that the DPSST has been operating at that level for a very long time, far too long. Everybody recognized that there was a need to enhance that training. And this investment, the construction of the academy, the development of the 16-week curriculum, is all, you know, great strides in the right direction, badly needed for all Oregon law enforcement. And we have pledged from the beginning, and I don't know in the detail of the director's budget and how, if he's getting all the staff he needs for to staff this new academy facility. That's been one of the historic difficulties of the DPSST, is that being able to acquire subject matter expert instructors to come in and do the training. And I told the governor and I told John when John was first appointed, one of the very most critical pieces of this is the new academy is going to have the staff on hand to be able to do the training, which has historically been one of the just as limiting a factor as the facility itself or the lack of a facility. And the state police pledges and has pledged, will continue to pledge, our subject matter experts who do our training today as partners with the new academy. And we will make our personnel available to the extent that they can be used as trainers in the new academy. We want to do that. It's the right thing to do, and we will do it. Now, there we can't take on 16, you know, a year-round training commitment for people that only occasionally have to do that within the state police because they've got other jobs. But we're going to be a partner, and we're going to help with every asset we have.
Well, we appreciate hearing that commitment, and in phase two, members, let's just plan on having further conversation about the proposed level of investment in training capacity, and see where that conversation takes us. Please stay put.
Yes.
As we move on to the next two items, criminal justice records and certification, fire training and certification. And again, the focus is on making sure we're clear on the purpose of these program units and activities, and being clear on the effectiveness of these two areas. Any questions or comments, Mr. Wilson?
I think pretty much the criminal justice record certification is purely the licensing certification process and record keeping and disciplinary related actions around law enforcement and those folks that the agency licenses. Fire training and certification is on the most part regional training. The funding source there comes from the fire insurance premium tax on the most part. The administrative and support services, this is the...
I do have another question. I was visited, Director Menace, by the Board of Investigators.
Yes, ma'am.
And help me recall what it is they're requesting. Is it to be under the umbrella of the DPSST?
Madam Chair, there is a bill introduced this session that I believe would put the Board of Investigators within the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. I have met with that director of that department. I'm not sure what her specific title is, Ms. Kelly Page. And in our discussions, what we have settled on would be a concept that would integrate the Board of Investigators. In essence, it would rescind the Board of Investigators as a separate board and incorporate the investigations function in the Private Security Policy Committee of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, because much of their work is very similar, although they're really dissimilar groups. They have a relationship in that they're private and that they do some level of security work. That organization, if I understand correctly, has a cash flow problem due to an accounting error that existed, I believe, in ascribing a $50,000 startup cost twice in the accounting system within the state. It's not the problem of the agency per se, from my understanding. And then I think they have gone back and recalculated their projected revenue and have found that their projected revenue is less than they originally had believed it to be. Hence, they cannot afford to continue as they currently exist. And there is at least some concept language being drafted. Whether it becomes a separate bill or integrated in some other bill is yet to be seen.
Okay. And are you supportive of their request and the...
Madam Chair, I'm supportive of the concept that would integrate them into the Private Security Policy Committee. I would not be supportive of having another additional board added to the agency as a subgroup in the department. I think it would exacerbate an existing problem with the board being 24 members already and the perception that it's too large. And I think once that would occur, there would be a desire to have a representative or two on the full board. I think that would be counterintuitive. I think it's more consistent to put them in the policy committee where most of the substantive work is done and perhaps have a representative or two on the policy committee where, again, the substantive work is done and then forwarded to the full board for confirmation.
Mr. Wilson, do you have a comment on this one at all?
Actually, Madam Chair, I haven't spent any time on this issue
okay.
and haven't caught up on it yet.
They came around and talked to me, and Linda's here, but I think I would support not putting them under Mr. Menace, but putting them under the other organization. That's what they're going to propose.
Okay. Did you wish to comment on this?
Similar statement, Madam Chair. They came to visit me just the other day, and I believe I kind of considered budget management, that's going to say BAM, to be governor's representatives. And they're looking for a place to put them. They're considering several different options, what I understand from yesterday.
Madam Chair, I think one of the options, and hopefully we can allow Linda to comment if this is not the case, but I think it was Department of Business and Consumer Affairs. Is that it? Consumer and Business Services, which seem to be a neutral area for them to light.
We'll hold off on further discussion about this particular...
Business and Consumer Services would like this function. I'm more than happy to relieve myself of the obligation.
If...
Madam Chair, can I get a point of levity in here? No one has asked to go to the Department of Administrative Services.
Moving right along.
Madam Chair, the admin and support services is the basic administrative and other infrastructure for the agency, the accounting, the personnel, the operations portion of the agency. Facilities operation and maintenance is basically the what it will become is the staffing that takes care of the facility. This will include, as the agency, the new facility comes online, the food service, and the dormitory is part of that. Dormitory and lodging costs are part of that line. That's a line that will grow next biennium as a result of that. Telecommunications, emergency management, dispatch training.
Would you go back? That's a line that will grow because...
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, it will grow because the academy isn't coming online for the full 24 months. There'll be roll up in 07-09. Make sure I get the right biennium.
Okay.
Telecommunications, EMD training, that funding source, I think, is mostly, if not all, 911 revenues that come from the Office of Emergency Management to train that specific group. I think they have about a 1 or 2 week training course, I believe. Private security licensing and training is all fee-driven from that particular industry. Most of it is a licensing or certification process. I believe the agency has some limited training or really enabling others for training. The Public Safety Memorial Fund, as I mentioned before, is a fund that is accessed by families that have either suffered through the death of a public safety officer of some type, or who has been severely disabled. The amount, we really don't know from year to year how much will go out of that fund, so the amount that's actually appropriated to that fund does vary from biennium to biennium. Traffic safety training is...
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The $451,000 other funds for Public Safety Memorial Fund, where do those come from?
Those are carry forward funds from previous appropriations or allocations of money. So what you'll see is that general fund, what had been CFA or allocations, vary depending on how much is being carried forward. Traffic safety training is purely, I believe that's a DOT grant, just for traffic safety training. And then the facility project office is something that will go away, I believe, in September or October of 2006, I believe, once the facility is completed, and a couple months after that as the warranty work and all the other, the project shuts down, this office will shut down. So that is the list. It would be the hope of the at least committee subcommittee staff that, given the number of items on this list, that wouldn't necessarily have to go high, low, and medium. We may actually be able to come out of this meeting in the next few minutes with a ranking from 1 to 11. Otherwise, staff will do, of course, what the subcommittee wants.
Any comments or further questions on these program units and activities? Do members wish to challenge or... I'm sorry, Representative Hansen.
Well, just kind of a technical question, mm-hmm. and that's we've got amounts listed in general fund. There's the proposal by the governor to move some of the uniform assessment fees and criminal fines and assessments into the general fund, and that hasn't happened yet. Will there... Is there a way that we can, do we need to do any more work in terms of identifying where, what we call the general fund dollars or where they're going to be coming from?
You want to speak to the technical?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, at least for staff at this stage, it doesn't matter if it's general fund or CFA, criminal fines and assessment. If the decision is made by the legislature to reinstate the criminal fines and assessment process, we will take care of that technically and bring it back as part of a bill, since CFA funds do also contribute to the general fund. It's just a matter of accounting. And so as you prioritize and actually allocate our appropriate funds, we can take care of it later on during session.
And in phase two, we need to have some discussion about the pros and cons of the approaches, the one that the governor used, and then keeping status quo. I'm going to Representative Hanson.
Well, if you'd want, is it time for the discussion of
yes.
the priorities? Basically, what I did with mine is follow the department's priorities, with the exception of I moved all of the direct training functions up as high as possible. For example, criminal justice training 2, fire training 3, telecommunications and private security training is 4 and 5, just from the concept that training is what they do, and that's the highest. The rest are support items for those. But I can't. If I was going to prioritize them as high and lows, they would all be highs. I don't. This is a rearranging thing, but I think it's pretty necessary to fund the whole package.
I certainly agree with your statement, Representative Hanson,
and it wouldn't break my heart if we did a different prioritization either.
But I also think that the looking at the training function, that the traffic safety training piece seems to fit higher up on the list, or maybe it's just a reordering of the whole training package. Senator Devil.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I know we're supposed to be discussing priorities, but I just had a clarification. Mm-hmm. The debt service, is that governor's budget debt service? I understand there's some potential reduction in that debt service, and is that factored into this, or is it not?
We talked about that prior to your arrival.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, quickly, this is the governor's amount, and it's likely to be reduced by roughly $3 million, a little over $3 million, just based on timing and market conditions.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my comments are similar to Representative Hansen's. I mean, I will traditionally probably rank, as the department did, private security licensing training lower, but that's a totally other funds, and I'm certain self-supporting function, so it really doesn't aid in much of our discussion here. I mean, if it was a question of who has the highest, if it was a question of the facility being overutilized and who had the highest rights to the facility, I'd probably move the private people out. That would be the question where that would come out. But other than that, I don't really have a problem with the department's ranking, although I do tend to normally rank the administration and operations slightly lower than actual instruction.
Thank you. Representative Hanna.
Madam Chair, I think that, first of all, congratulations. This organization did a nice job of putting this together. I thought they gave good explanation for their rankings. My items 1 through 7 match theirs. Their 8, 9, and 10 are my 10, 8, and 9, and my 11 is the same. So along with Senator Devlin, I, too, would rank private training lower only because of testimony that we heard today. We don't have any problem making this place busy with needs of our own, and if we had to bump them out of the way, they would be of my least concern. Now, there might be some legal ramifications to that, but otherwise, nice work.
Mine were just within two of theirs. There's no difference by more than 2 points. Pretty much followed theirs.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Since this is Director Minnis's first opportunity before a Ways and Means Subcommittee member, I don't want him to have too positive of experience. So can you have a few problems with his presentation so he doesn't get a unanimous sort of...
there is one unaddressed area, and that is when we get to the place in phase two where we take up performance measures. The agency has asked for our assistance, and there are some challenges there. We would just ask that you add a performance measure for Senator Devlin.
Yeah. So she'll get. Madam Chair, I just thought, given that this is his first opportunity on this side before Ways and Means Subcommittee, he shouldn't get by so far as easily as he has gotten by.
Don't forget he got out more money than anybody when Senator Winters was here and he used all the acronyms. We did get him that way.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to... are you planning to stay for the rest of the...
Sure, that was my understanding.
Okay, very good. Because we may ask you to come back, come forward as we're talking about the Oregon State Police.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay.
Thank you so much. Superintendent.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you ready to start the walkthrough your department? And again, colleagues, our challenge here is to review the purpose and effectiveness of the program units and activity descriptions, and to challenge or question the department's ranking.
Madam Chair, this one we may go back to the high, medium, low, just because there are 24 items and it may be easier. This worksheet again should be exactly what the agency presented as an agency wide, in a little larger form. We've added the two columns on the left. The patrol function is at the top. This is a portion of the patrol. There's further down, there's at least one other item for contract services down on line 20. I think there's also services on line 10. But generally, the stuff on line 1 is your primary enforcement programs, the troopers on the road on the most part. And I encourage the superintendent or staff to chime in if I'm missing anything.
Would you also... Let's start with an overview of the challenges or problem areas in the budget. Just recap that.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, as you know, the patrol, and I'll just start with patrol, has lost many troopers over probably the last 20 years, probably half what they had 20 years ago. The other major change in patrol is the funding source. It used to be primarily general fund, and in the governor's budget, he is expecting lottery line games or other lottery revenues to fund the patrol division on the most part. So that's why you see that as a lottery-funded portion. Other issues are the criminal division loses, I believe it's 21 detectives in this budget. That will be felt by both major drug teams and major crime teams. Some of the sex abuse and child abuse cases will not be handled by the agency to the degree they have been in the past. At the same time, there are 8 positions in the criminal division being added for the governor's meth initiative, which I believe all will be detectives, or 7 will be detectives, and one will be a supervisor. There's also one position added in forensics at the crime lab for meth-related items in the governor's budget. Another issue here, which has not been discussed in a great amount of detail to this part, is some of the funding issues that I'm sure we'll get into in phase two around the department infrastructure. The cuts over the last 2 biennia have not only taken cuts at patrol and some of the other functions of the department. It's also taken a pretty good whack at the support structure underneath, and that's not just the typical admin staff. It also includes staff out in the field whose responsibilities now have to be picked up by detectives or patrol troopers or whoever, filing of reports, things that support staff may have done in the past, now troopers are having to do on their time, taking them off the road for those responsibilities. Forensics is funded generally at the same level as before. In the previous biennia, they are down some from, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago, but they are funded at the same level as 03-05. Trying to think if there's any other major issues. That's probably enough major issues for now.
Yeah, I do recall that one of the infrastructure problems is with the radio system, that it has a real short life.
And I think, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, will try to bring in that whole radio system discussion, both the issues specific to state police, but also the whole interoperability issues across state government sometime during phase two. It is a major issue. You even heard some of it yesterday by Department of Corrections.
That's right. Okay. Well, let's go. Let's take them one by one.
Senator Devlin.
I'm sorry, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to get a clarification from Doug, and I think I'm items 1 and 10, should the legislature decide to not accept the governor's decision to dedicate a lot of these funds, those would move to general funds, and then item 16 would remain a Measure 66 lottery-funded item, or should remain, my understanding.
Senator, or Madam Chair, Senator Devlin.
Or is it just direct lottery?
Line 16, I believe that's the entire Fish and Wildlife line. Yes, it is. There are two sort of lottery sources in there. There is the ongoing ballot measure 66, and then as part of that lottery shift, just like patrol, the governor replaced, I think, $4.1 million of general fund with line game lottery revenues. So roughly 40% of that would be what had been general fund before.
Okay.
And the remainder, I believe, is Measure 36 funds. And I do, if members want, I do have updated that I'll quickly pass around that does have the detail pages behind the page we're working off of. If you want to sort of look at a little more detail on individual line items. These are updated by the department from the previous ones you've had. There's been some minor changes that I think were discussed with the agent or with the subcommittee already. Madam Chair, the second line is part of the Human Resources Department, which really is a misnomer in title. Human Resources is the command structure. As well as sort of the basic department administrative infrastructure, but it also includes dispatch and some of the field staff out there that support patrol, fish and wildlife, and the criminal division. So in this line you have the business support functions, what debt services in the agency, along with the office of office of the superintendent, so the department leadership, as well as professional standards, which is a labor related personnel internal investigations, that type of item. The third line is another part of the human resources division. It includes the field command out there in the three regions, the command structure, as well as the staff at the various field command structures that support the work of the other divisions. So it may include, is this the line with dispatch in it also, Ken? Okay, so line 3 also includes dispatch. Will probably be the largest number of staff is probably in dispatch. And if you remember, there are two dispatch centers now, one here in Salem and one down in Central Point. The fourth line is wireless. This is the wireless support. This is basically the infrastructure that supports the dispatch and car-to-car communication and the rest. Again, there'll be some discussion with this later in phase two about what's happening in other agencies. Line five is the first line of forensics. The second line down is on number 11. This is the identification forensics, which is roughly half of the forensics program. In fact, I think it's exactly half the way it's divided. They've just made an attempt to make the distinction between some basic identification forensics and then, I suppose, just the analysis and some others. If they have questions, I would urge you to bring Mr. Schmierbach or Major Spear up to the table on that.
Are there any questions?
Which item?
Item 5, forensics. And again, please remember, this is the only, the state crime lab system is the only crime lab system in the state. Portland Police Bureau, the whatever other organization doesn't have their own crime lab. About 90% of the crime lab's responsibility is not for state police related work, it's for local law enforcement across the state. Line six is a large portion of the criminal division. This is your major crime teams, your major drug enforcement activities, arson, criminal analysts, clearinghouse functions for missing children, and homicide incidents. So it's really your basic structure in the criminal division. Other parts of that are down on line 13 and 14, which we'll get to later in lines 19 and 22. Again, the criminal division does both investigations of inside state institutions like corrections, but also is a major support function for local law enforcement out there that if a major crime happens, the state police are part of a local crime team that may investigate that crime. So it is also a support function to local law enforcement, mostly to smaller law enforcement agencies that may not have the expertise the state police have. Line 7 is the identification services section. This is basically the criminal records checks functions. Again, this will be an issue in phase two we'll need to discuss further because there is there have been financial issues in this agency that they're working themselves out of, and there is a major fee bill that has been introduced that this section will need to continue operations at the level that the expectations are that they operate. Line 8 is a criminal justice information center or system. This is, if I'm not mistaken, is the LEDS folks. Basically, they do collect information from every law enforcement agency. It is a central repository for that information, and a number of other systems within state government and elsewhere rely on this system for information. Number 9 is your training. Roughly $1 million for training that's been discussed earlier in the meeting. This, again, is both supports their basic training as well as their ongoing continuing training that's more specific to the state police. And as the superintendent said, this does not support all of their training efforts. Over the biennium, they have to find other resources in their budget to continue supporting what training they feel they need to provide. Number 10, and this is where I may need some support.
I think Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You want to explain that training, that you're going to a different line item for training dollars or
what,
looking for savings on some other line item? What exactly do you mean by that?
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, I knew I probably shouldn't have said that, but as I went through this, but I will. It's basically as you find, let's say, vacancy savings, or maybe they didn't spend as much on a contract as they thought they were going to. They'll move money from one part of the agency to another. Just like DHS, this agency often will have at least one rebalance during the biennium. And training has been part an issue in the rebalances that I've been participating in with this agency.
Due to the CMA.
Line 10, primary support programs. This is patrol, and I think I'll take some input to make sure I get this clarified from either the superintendent or Mr. Weiss. But I believe this is things like the accident review team and some of those folks.
Representative Hannon?
As you clarify that, will you help us with where the funding comes from on that as well?
As he's looking for that, the $5.6 million, that is the line game lottery that used to be general fund on the most part. Now in the governor's budget is lottery funds.
I'm sorry, follow up. We're gonna get right there. Madam Chair, how will we deal with this issue if line game lottery doesn't end up being economic development, therefore cannot fund state police?
That's going to have to be a discussion on the part of the co-chairs and leadership, as well as the membership of this committee.
But I give Representative Hannah a quick demonstration. This is the quarter out of this pocket. This is the quarter put over in this pocket. And I'll take this quarter and I'll put it back over in that pocket. It'll become general funds, and the lottery funds will undoubtedly go to education or some other purpose. General funds will.
And we'll take it from education.
Yeah, that'll be popular.
Well,
it'll be just exchanged around.
I just think it's worth saying this now while we're on this line item that, you know, we saw the governor's spokesman come in and I think you could say struggle to keep a straight face when he sold the idea that this was economic development. But it's a discussion we're going to have and finally get to. It is sort of funny. We are moving dollars and I want them to be funded.
Sure, I don't want to make light of it because, I mean, what the state police, particularly the patrol division, has always looked for is a dedicated source of funds. And I think at first this was presented as a potential dedicated source of funds. I think some people have now seen the realities of that as a real dedicated source of funds. And so, I mean, ultimately you'll make that decision, but we can use the lottery funds clearly under the Constitution for some things. And we can clearly, once we pay for those things with the lottery funds, transfer general funds to pay for the patrol division. But that doesn't put the patrol division in any better situation than they've been in any previous biennium since they were taken off the gas tax some 24 years ago.
Technically correct.
Please continue.
The clarification on what's on line 10, Mr. Weiss may be able to help us with the functions or the superintendent.
Well, we have, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we have a group of specialized programs that are part of the patrol division budget, programs such as our accident reconstruction. These are specialists within patrol, drug recognition evaluation experts, our aggressive driving program, the motorcycle program. We have an aircraft, one single-engine airplane that does aerial speed enforcement, and we have some other programs, small programs that are really not part of our day-to-day standard patrol operation with a regular trooper and a marked patrol car out in the community, but rather these specialized functions that we provide not only for in support of our own mission, but also in support of, again, local law enforcement. These are the people, the accident collision reconstructionists, that I think people understand generally what that means. There's a serious crash, fatality in many cases. We send these people in with that are specially trained with special equipment to go in and put that back together and be able to understand why the accident happened and what all took place. And we have these specialized programs separated out from the rest of the patrol division function and rated. We only did that for the sake of being able to, if someone said, well, isn't there something that you could, you can't just lump all patrol together as being all of the same priority. And we have established in this document that the first priority of the patrol division is to be out there to respond to crashes, crimes in progress, emergency first response services. That's the number one thing that the state police is responsible for. And so that's why the main core of what the patrol division does is priority one. But these other patrol functions really don't fit that same level of urgency. They're rather, they're ancillary programs that in some cases help to enhance our capacity as an organization to provide those patrol services or enhance our ability to do a little better job in some specialized area than the regular sort of bread and butter of the division.
Mm-hmm. Continue.
Madam Chair, the next line is line 11, which is the other half of the forensics program. They've divided the forensics program into two parts here. Line 12 is the medical examiner's office. This is the entire medical examiner's office, and I think people probably understand their function. A great tour if you want to take it sometime.
A lot better now than it was last biennium.
But watch what room you walk into.
Yes, sir.
The criminal division on line 13, this is the Office of Public Safety and Security. There's quite a bit of discussion of sort of the role of this office, but this is an office of sworn officers that are part of the state police, but they really also operate under the supervision and part of the head of Homeland Security, which has yet to come forward in front of this committee. The funding source for this, the $1 million over as in other funds, starts out as general fund in the Office of Homeland Security, who then contract for the services of this office from the state police. And it really, part of the issue is who can actually have sworn officers and who's responsible for them, as I understand. But they also have functions within the state police, traditional functions, as well as Homeland Security.
Yes, excuse me if I may add a brief comment. The Office of Public Safety and Security, as I talked about in Phase 1, is a small group of people that we designated to work full-time on matters relating to either intelligence gathering, counterterrorism, work in some task force in partnership with the FBI. These people were then and will continue to be Oregon State Police troopers or officers who are responsible to the Department of State Police, but whom, under the establishment of this Office of Homeland Security, are basically on assignment over there, because there's certain parts of what Homeland Security does that can only be done by law enforcement in the context of not only the state, but with our partnership with the federal government. Mm-hmm. And so the people will remain state police officers accountable for their performance and conduct to this organization, but on assignment to the Office of Homeland Security, just the same way as our people assigned to the lottery and tribal gaming enforcement are on assignment to those units. They're still our people and subject to our authority.
The next line is a sex offender registration line. This is a group that that basically local law enforcement and others, this is a database of keeping track of where these folks are, and the state police are responsible for administrating that database.
Is that adults only? The adult offenders?
Yes. Is it adults only? The database includes everybody that falls under the law of the sex offender registration law and is required to register. And that law applies not only to adults but also to juveniles under some circumstances.
If we could get a clarification on that, I'm just thinking about testimony we received from the Oregon Youth Authority and their concerns around that population.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
The increased number of young people who are now in that category. So.
Yes. I'm sorry, the question was get more detail on the numbers?
Not so much the numbers, but are you registering adults
and criminals, or is it just adult sex offenders?
Madam Chair, I will get a clarification, but my understanding is the statutes that require registration under the Sex Offender Act apply to all persons. But in the past, some of the discussion we've had with the Youth Authority mm-hmm. has been surrounding the definition of predatory
yes.
sex offenders mm-hmm. and whether or not juveniles can, by definition, be classified as predatory or not. And it has been an ongoing discussion for many years. We have worked very closely with the Youth Authority on that. And we can follow up with whatever detail you'd like to have on that.
For phase two?
Yes, ma'am. We'll be happy to.
Thank you.
Line 15 is the Forensics Implied Consent Unit. This is the group of staff that maintain the breathalyzers across the state. The general fund there is the staff cost and ongoing costs. The $1.5 million in the other fund column represents the proceeds of certificates of participation, or COPs, that are included in the governor's budget to replace the current stock of breathalyzers who are limping along in terms of their performance right now.
Yes,
not
sir.
Necessarily performance, but keeping them operating at the performing letter, the level they need to.
Last, so to speak.
They have outlived, the machines have outlived their intended or anticipated life. Are being, as a result of that, the maintenance costs are, they continue to, we don't have any functioning that aren't, you know, in service that are not working at optimum level. It's just that the maintenance costs are getting high to keep them running. And we expect and hope to be able to replace them in the next biennium. Keep in mind, if you would, members, that the state police, and through this program, provides all of the breath testing equipment in use in the state. Again, not just for the state police, but everyone. So it's a system function.
Please continue.
Line 16 is the Fish and Wildlife Division's basic functions. The revenue sources here include the Department of Fish and Wildlife fees, license fees that flow to the department for the enforcement of those laws. It includes the ballot measure 66 lottery funds, as well as the $4.1 million of what I'll call line game general fund shift revenues. Part of the reason that you do that, they have had sort of quote unquote general fund in here before, is that these are also sworn troopers that they may be the only law enforcement people out there for tens of miles, so they also respond to other types of things other than fish and wildlife if needed.
There's a notation here about aircraft. Is that the same aircraft referenced earlier?
Madam Chair, no. Members of the committee, there are four aircraft, I think the number is four, aircraft for fish and wildlife that are separate from the single aircraft we have for traffic enforcement. The fish and wildlife aircraft are used for census population counting and other things with and aerial enforcement of fish and wildlife laws. A great deal of the use of those aircraft is done in partnership with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and their biology people who utilize those assets to be able to help manage the resource. They're separate from the other plane.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hanna.
Doug, what impact, talking about the license increases for fish and game, did any of the increased license revenue come to state police? Or did it go through general fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, I think it does not go into general fund, I don't believe. It comes into ODFW, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then they allocate it between their own functions, and they also allocate a portion to the state police for the enforcement functions. You as a legislature pretty much decide what that allocation is between this committee and the committee next door, the Natural Resource Subcommittee.
Mm. Follow-up to that. Do you know if you got any additional funding out of that revenue for the increase in fees?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, not exactly, because to us it's a transfer that happens every biennium from Fish and Wildlife, Department of Fish and Wildlife, to us. and what factors or rationale or things would drive the available revenue for transfer to us, I can't speak to. We get the transfer, and there have been biennials in the distant past when they didn't have the revenue to transfer, but that's not been an issue in the last couple. So,
Madam Chair, I'd just suggest that we get a little history on that, because their fee increases on licensing in the last biennium was, I think, in the neighborhood of 30%. There should have been a substantial revenue stream.
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, if I may, as Doug has commented, there is an understanding or a tradition, a history that Fish and Wildlife, Department of Fish and Wildlife funds a portion of each of these troopers' salaries. And because they do other things besides fish and wildlife enforcement, it isn't 100%. And it's healthy that is the case, because we still need to be able to have these troopers be able to be assigned to do whatever the urgency of the moment is without worrying that we're stepping across some fund source obstacle. But anyway, we can get you the history on exactly what that has been.
My compliments to them. I think in many cases they're the ultimate maximized use of individual, and they're out there alone.
Thank you.
But we'll get some fee history to maybe offer during phase two between the department and myself.
Thank you.
Line 17 is the enterprise service section. This really is the internal computer operations of the agency and the support functions out there for the information management responsibilities of the agency. There are, and we'll talk about this in phase two in the work session, there are some challenges for this group in terms of funding, just because of the cutbacks. It's part of that department infrastructure.
Okay.
Line 18 is lottery, tribal gaming. Sources of revenue here are either directly from the lottery or directly from the various Indian game or tribal gaming operations. The staff is either assigned directly to the lottery or to the various tribal gaming facilities across the state or groups of facilities. Number 19, the criminal division. This is a group that provides security both across the Capitol Mall and the Dignitary Protection group, which are basically assigned to the governor more than anyone else.
Clarification.
Senator Devlin?
Is this probably $900,000 coming directly? Could this be like the $900,000 coming directly from this building? And what's showing here is other funds. Is the rest of the mall and probably coming through DAS?
If I remember right, and Mr. Weiss can correct me, the $900,000 is probably for the Dignitary Protection. The $2.1 million of other funds is through contract either with DAS or LAC, Legislative Administration Committee.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Ken Weiss, Budget Director of State Police. We do have individual agreements, one with Department of Administrative Services, one with the Legislative Administrative Committee here. Each of those contracts are just a little bit more than $1 million a biennium, and they each require different services from our Capitol Mall Patrol Office, which is located here in the basement of this building.
$900,000, though, for Dignitary Protection?
That is, Madam Chair, yes, that is the money that we use to pay our general funded officers and our lieutenant that oversees that program and full-time officers that are assigned to to that program.
We provide, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Other than special circumstances of dignitaries, the only statewide officer that we provide protection to is the governor, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, that is correct. I mean, practical reality is it's the governor and his family, or her family, as the case may be, and the it relates to the security of the mansion and the governor's family,
yes,
themselves. So I have to point out to you that this amount that's budgeted here does not cover what we spend in that area. We have more people assigned than...
That raises a question, because there have been occasions when other dignitaries required protection because of
whatever the circumstances were that were dangerous, if you will, going on around them. So is this the same fund that you would draw on, or the same group of officers that you would grow?
I would take you back to priority number one on the list. When we have these special circumstances come up, that's the same pool of people. We're gonna take somebody from either patrol or possibly the criminal division and assign them to people who are the subject of some immediate threat, or they we could go on and on about the kinds of things that come up throughout the biennium, but we'll get them take officers from other assignments and just assign them to take care of matters on a short-term basis. It wouldn't be reflected in the budget.
Well, when we get to phase two, that's another area that we really need to more fully understand.
Okay.
What the demands are on the capacity that you have, which sounds like it gets stretched.
Yes, ma'am, it does.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would there be any savings if we sent the governor through the defense tactic training courses and guy maybe concealed up?
Might mean that we'd have to get a new governor.
Could be hard on it. I think that door is going to open shortly.
Yes. Madam Chair, Madam Subcommittee, line 20. These are contracts that the Patrol Division has with various, generally state institutions for security or basic security or just basic law enforcement responsibilities. They include Oregon State University, State Park, State Fair, some responsibilities with the Corps of Engineers, Forest Service, Snow Park Enforcement, those kinds of things. They're all contract other funds coming into this agency for those functions.
Oregon State University?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have a patrol office on the campus of Oregon State.
An office, okay.
That is funded by the university.
Senator Devlin?
Clarification. That was not listed here, but I know that you're responsible in some cases for investigations inside correctional facilities of the state. With those, are you compensated from the Department of Corrections for those, or do those just show up in your criminal investigations division or some other division?
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, it's the latter. We envision that as part of the responsibility of our criminal division, and there is no revenue source for compensation attached. But that is one of the responsibilities of this agency.
You're probably responsible, Madam Chair. You're probably responsible also for other state facilities like the state hospital in terms of investigation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, we are responsible, the criminal division, well, the state police in total is responsible for all criminal investigations in all state institutions, which at times can be a daunting task as well. Not lately, thankfully.
I want to back up just a bit. Oregon State University pays for its own Oregon State Police office.
I'm sure that's correct.
On campus.
Yes.
Other universities have some other arrangement with private security.
Madam Chair, as does Oregon State, they still continue to maintain some private security services. In addition to the sworn police functions of the state police that they contract with us for, but it is the only university in the system in which that's the case.
And how long has that been the arrangement?
I can get you an exact date, but I would say close to 10 years.
Line 21 is sort of a similar line.
I'm sorry. Representative Hanson.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Thank you, Madam Chair. On the snow park enforcement, is that primarily about collecting a fee on lack of having a snow park permit?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, my understanding of that is that what it's really about is getting vehicles removed that are blocking the path of the snow removal equipment that are working in the mountain. In those snow park areas, If it's about revenue, then I wouldn't be very interested in having our people up there. But it's a seasonal function that, of course, obviously, and we provide that in partnership with ODOT so that they can get their snow removal equipment through these areas, and that enforcement provides some deterrent. Certainly, I suppose it serves as a deterrent to not be up there without a snow park permit. But the primary purpose of having our troopers up there is if there's a vehicle that needs to be removed with or without a snow park permit, that the car gets out of there and gets towed so they can plow.
Follow up, Madam Chair. I'm driving at a solution here. I'm not picking at you on this.
I understand.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the fees that are collected for snow park permits provide for the plowing of those parking lots through ODOT. It's a direct correlation between those people that want to use those parking lots pay for the snow park fee to get the lot plowed. So it's a fee relationship, and it seems to me that to have an officer there to get a vehicle towed might not be a super high priority, and we might want to look at a system where when those folks, and keep in mind I ride snowmobiles, so I'm saying this from experience, when those folks that buy their snowmobile license, you put a surcharge, if you will, and I'm not a great tax guy, but I see officers in these snow park permits, and they're great people, but they're basically checking to see if you have a snow park permit, and if you got a snow park permit when you renewed your license for your snowmobile or other recreational vehicle that needed that type of licensing, it might let you be out there watching for the 40% of accidents caused by excessive speed rather than snow removal.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, I appreciate the perspective. I would like to add, though, that these people that are doing the snow park enforcement are not our regular troopers. These are seasonal people that we hire for that purpose only, and if they weren't there for that purpose, they wouldn't be with us for any other purpose, as a general statement. These are sometimes cadet officers that aren't trained or equipped to do regular patrol work. Sometimes they're retirees. There's a variety of individuals who are employed by us seasonally to do that snow park enforcement. So it doesn't... I just want to make that clear.
Follow-up is I've never seen those individuals, but they must be out there. I take your word that they must be out there. Sure. I've always seen just regular officers.
Well, you might not, if I may, you may not be able to distinguish them because they're dressed the same and driving the same equipment. But so you might not recognize that they're a temporary employee when you see them.
Okay.
Line 21, Fish and Wildlife, similar line to the above line in terms of these are contract services that the department has with, like, the Marine Board, DEQ, and various federal grants relating to the Fish and Wildlife area. Line 22, the high-intensity drug trafficking area. These are federal funds that come to the state police. Many of these funds then are distributed to local governments. Department of Justice receives some of these federal funds, but basically this is a program that has coordination among both local and state officials in certain areas of the state around drug traffic.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Representative Hansen and I, even though the money is federal funds, I think we need to put that up higher priority, you know, than 22nd. We're not using general funds, but we would recommend, I think, that be moved up in a higher priority. Am I speaking correctly there?
Yes.
It doesn't cost us anything to move it up.
I think we had a question during earlier testimony about whether additional federal funds for methamphetamine enforcement might be coming to the state. We didn't have an answer at that time, but still worth pursuing.
I just think it's good policy and good because it is a high, you know, we talk about it. I think the two things this session we're talking about is meth and drug treatment, mental health, and what's the other one?
mental health, mental health and meth.
Prevention.
Sorry.
Carry on.
Line 23 is the function, statutory required function for the Boxing and Wrestling Commission. There's a commission and an executive director. The funding for the executive director had been partially paid out of general fund. It has been cut in the governor's budget, and at least under what's assumed in the governor's budget, the $78,000 will not be sufficient to keep this program running at the level it has been in the past. So that'll be an issue that will be talked about a bit in work session, how to fund that. I believe that there may be some new projections of revenues that can help us sort of get to that answer. And then the last line, line 24, is Tobacco Compliance Task Force, as well as the Juvenile Tobacco Use Enforcement. These are funds that come from either the Department of Revenue for the Tobacco Tax Compliance, which is a joint program between Department of Revenue, Department of Justice, and State Police. That program was started, I think, two biennia ago, increased in 2003-2005, and the governor's budget returns it to its original level in terms of staffing. And then the Juvenile Tobacco Use Enforcement is a program in partnership with the Department of Human Services. And, Madam Chair, that is the Department of State Police and their various programs.
Colleagues, any additional questions, comments, or anyone wishing to challenge or question the department's rankings? Senator Hanson, Representative Hanson.
Thank you. Basically, the tact I took on these, my priorities are probably different from the department's in terms of their C priorities, which are support services to the entire criminal justice system. I rank very high, and that with corresponding shifts to lower categories for A and B, but I think I try to be relatively consistent within that group. This is another budget that I hope there are no additional cuts to. For the last two bienniums that I've served on this committee, I mean, this department has probably been hit with more individual budget cuts than any other agency. I would imagine the support services are probably less than adequate to be doing what we would hope they'd be doing. I just, you know, I've been through a couple sessions with a lot of nickel and diming. I think we've rang all of the economies out the last couple budget go-rounds that we could find, and they weren't based on cuts that necessarily were wise and thoughtful as much as cuts that were absolutely necessary because we had to cut some dollar amounts. And so this budget continues that without really doing any of the rebuilding that probably should be happening. So I would certainly hope that we wouldn't go into any of these programs and trying to wring out, you know, a little more here or there, because I just don't think it's there.
Senator Devlin.
I would concur with Representative Hansen's comments and concur with the comment about the high-intensity drug trafficking that others have made. It doesn't really affect general fund issues, so it won't really impact some of the other issues we have to deal with. I would be interested in phase two, even though we won't probably have any ability to do anything to improve that area, for the committee to get a better understanding of what the Well, what the conditions are now, I know the morale is very positive, but in the patrol division, in terms of actual requirements and in terms of deployment of patrol officers around the state and what's happened since our last round of cuts in that area. I would also, Doug has been very upfront, I remember during our last deliberations on this budget in the 03 session, there was this discussion, and Mr. Wilson brought it forward, that we may be cutting the core sort of administrative support functions of the Oregon State Police too tightly, and that we might have to reexamine those to at least some degree in the next biennium, which is proving to be potentially the case. I think the biggest challenge I have here in this, and I've ranked everything relatively high, is that to look at this, it's at least two law enforcement agencies within one. Their own law enforcement function and mission, and then the support that they provide to every other law enforcement agency in the state. And that's the dilemma that we sometimes face. I've always been a little bit concerned in one particular issue with the patrol division. We asked the men and women of that division, like any law enforcement officer, to put their life on the line. I'm afraid in some cases, given the cuts that we've had, we've gone past that level, and we've gotten unrealistic expectations of it's one thing to put your life on the line when, if you needed backup, it's 20 minutes away, or 5 minutes away, or 3 minutes away. If it's an hour and a half away, or 3 hours away, we may have pushed past the line that we should realistically push past, and I just want to put that on the record.
I would just add that what is clear to me, is that the stability and responsiveness of this part of the public safety system is in jeopardy. That's just very clear to me. We are about to launch a major public safety initiative around methamphetamine without the capacity, and that's acknowledging that in the governor's budget, I think there are 8 or 9 officers devoted to methamphetamine enforcement. Again, without the capacity to fully respond to the epidemic that we're experiencing in our Oregon communities. And so I'm keeping that framed in my mind as we move forward and as we get into phase two. We just need to have a fuller discussion and understanding about capacity, the capacity that you have to truly respond in a manner that is accountable to Oregonians, but we also need to be clearly articulating to Oregonians that we fall far short of capacity to respond, and we are also, as Senator Devlin said, we're creating circumstances that put officer safety in jeopardy, and that can't continue. So we are where we are for this afternoon. Members, if you'll pass your ranking sheets to Mr. Wilson. Doug, you want to say more about your process, what you're going to be doing with the information we're passing on to you, and when we can expect to see it back in whatever form?
Madam Chair, what I'm doing is taking your the sheets that you have here and sort of averaging the scores between the five of you, and coming up with a new ranking, and if there's items that are at an equal score average between you, Then the secondary sort is what the in the order the agency had. So I completed Department of Corrections almost just before this meeting, and we'll be bringing back that list and OIA for sure tomorrow, probably these two too, for your quick review, just to make sure
were
no one
any
has
big problems in the writings.
To be honest, I haven't taken a look at Department of Corrections. I looked at it, and there were some shifts. My guess is taking a look at what you just sent me to the state police, there will be a few more shifts here in the state police. I'm not sure about OIA since that's Sheila's. So tomorrow I'll bring those back for your review. Again, there's no vote being taken, but we want to make sure we didn't misrepresent anything or whatever. Department of Justice is up tomorrow. You may get that list yet tonight or tomorrow morning. We had them redo that list to be a little more specific in some of their programs, and I think they were finishing meeting with the Attorney General on that later this afternoon, and we'll try to get that list to your offices as soon as we have it for tomorrow's meeting. And then Thursday is the Judicial Department and the Public Defense Services Commission, which I think you already have those lists.
The other thing I would share with you, members, is that while I've not talked with her recently, I'm hearing through her staff that Senator Winters is also wanting to weigh in on these rankings and priorities, and I'm just really pleased to hear that, I think. I hope she's also resting and taking care of herself.
About the trip, no.
Was it state penitentiary?
Our caucus was trying to do something Friday, and there's a lot of committee meetings are outside the building that day, and one's in my district on Friday.
Not this Friday.
Oh, it's not this
Friday. No. I think, Madam Chair, Members of the Subcommittee, we just wanted to open up the possibility of a Friday tour, probably after the floor sessions, the state penitentiary for those that want to come. I know the department is eager for you to walk through that as a contrast to Coffee Creek before we get to their Phase 2 presentation, but given sort of the tightness of the schedule.
Contrast to Coffee Creek.
What?
That will be a contrast.
Yes, it will. So I think this Friday is not good for a number of reasons, but I think we'll probably try to schedule that in one of the next 2 weeks on a Friday as soon as the House sessions are done.
We were looking at April 8th.
April 8th,
April
okay,
8th
I wasn't in the meeting.
The
okay.
Madam Chair, what about the idea of doing an evening tour out there? I mean, I don't know if that's out of the realm for them because of the staffing issues or... But for those of us who only are here during the week and try to go home on the weekends,
we can certainly inquire.
Possibility.
We had also talked about that Thursday, the 7th, as well as the 8th. So, but we can certainly inquire about
just
that evening. Thank you for suggesting that.
There are also the opportunities for just individual tours. Not necessarily have to be a group tour. But they also wanted to have you sample prison kitchen food.
Could eat dinner there.
But I do know the night, one of the disadvantages during an evening tour would be the industry section, like the furniture and some of those, are not probably up and operating, and that would be one factor. And to be honest, I'm not sure about security staff. I know late at night security staff would be an issue.
We could
do a sleepover.
We also have a request, an invitation from Director Menes to visit his agency. We also want to visit the military department, have a public hearing there, and Homeland Security, that agency, have a hearing. Public hearing with those folks as well. So that's just a heads up of what's in front of us. I want to thank the committee for its work yesterday and this afternoon as we are embarking on this new budget process. And I know that the Ways and Means co-chairs have been watching our deliberations, and we're all learning together. We appreciate very much Director Menace, your time with us this afternoon. Superintendent, thank you so much for being with us again. And if there's nothing else for the good of the order, we are adjourned.